This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
Oh, what a day. Just grateful to be on the air here at the Vegas Stats and Information Network, and a great show on tap at that. Wes Reynolds is alongside because it is a Monday. We also have plenty of content with Tim Murray. He's going to join us at the bottom of this hour. George Shahori is with us every single Monday at the top of the next hour as well. A lot of football content for you. Don't worry, we'll get to the World Series as well. But Wes, feeling good. Feeling good. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, JVT.
Like that vest,
bro. It's always a blessing to be with you.
You know, I have always wondered what the point of wearing a vest is. It keeps your internal organs warm, does it not? Because I feel like your arms still have to be cold.
Well, this is Wes wear, man. I gotta wear the blazer on the weekend. So now we got some fall weather finally here in Las Vegas. Didn't get a gradual drop. It was a precipitous drop from the 90s just a couple days ago. And now very low temperatures on this chilly morn here in the desert.
What do you think? You like my coat? Looks
I do.
Pretty good, right?
I do.
What'd you call it? What kind of a coat is this? Well, Jacob's a very big fashionista. He wears capris with hiking boots, so he knows about fashion.
Okay. These are not capris. These are joggers with not hiking boots. These are Blundstone Australian boots. Very expensive, very comfortable. Okay.
By the way, the best part is Jacob thinks he's making himself sound good right now.
No, I'm just clarifying myself. Two, JVT, I like your jacket. It's a canvas jacket.
There it is.
It's very nice. I like the vest as well.
Nice.
Vests are invented to help layer better, too. That's kind of the point of the vest. So you don't have to mess with the sleeves if you're layering. It also keeps, if you're wearing a button-up shirt and you're not wearing an undershirt, the vest will keep the chest warm from the gaps in the button-up shirt. So
that's
there's
right.
Your explanation for the vest.
Speaking of gaps, hopefully there's no gaps in the Chicago Bears defense. Ba-bam! Monday Night Football. Let's talk
transition.
About it. Look at that.
How about that?
Rams, 6-point favorite. Total of 44.5 here in a fascinating matchup on Monday night. So let's talk. This is bounced 6, 5.5, 6, 5.5 throughout the week. We haven't really seen anything different other than the numbers, those two numbers that we've seen up to this point. So your initial read here, Wes, because my initial read is, look, and I think I've talked to you about this before. There were a few teams that I was looking to play against, right, in these few coming weeks. The Titans were one of them. It got there. The Cardinals were one of them, but I didn't want to use, right, this week against the Seahawks to do it, and ultimately was right in doing that. The other is the Bears, but I also don't think this is one of the weeks to do it. When you have a Rams team that is so dependent on a running game, going up against the fifth best defense in the National Football League and a number like 6, I just don't think it's the spot to play against them at this point.
Yeah, it's one of those, the spot or the number here. And some guys stick to the numbers and some guys will skirt the numbers based on the spot, which is kind of what I did here. I do like the Rams at -6. I know it's a high number. Hopefully you maybe got some pending teasers because I do think that this is their game to win. Now, Akeem Hicks is going to go. Got upgraded to probable. He did not practice on Friday. Khalil Mack was a limited participant, so if he's not upgraded, I last saw him as questionable. So that would be a huge loss, obviously, for Chicago and a welcome sight for Jared Goff, not to see him on the field. But what we've seen is some support for the under, and I don't disagree with it. It's 44.5 across the board, and why not? Look at the last two meetings between these teams. If you recall that Sunday Night Football game 2 years ago in 2018, Bears 15, Rams 6.
Mm-hmm.
Closing total was 50. Last year in Los Angeles, Rams 17, Bears 7. Closing total of 40. Rams a very good under team, especially when they're a favorite. 13-3 the under last 16. Bears, of course, 4-5 their last games to the under. And look, the Bears defense is for real. I mean, we talked about it last night on opening line.
It might be the only part of this team that's legitimate,
right? So we at least know that's not smoke and mirrors because they held Tampa Bay to 243 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That very few teams, if any, can do that. And so I know that defense is for real, but you look at what Foles is doing, it's kind of very similar numbers to Mitch Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really an upgrade, but the fact is that they're winning and the market perceives them to be better. But yet they're 6-point dogs to a team that has only beaten the NFC East.
Right.
That's all the Rams have done this year is beaten the Patsies in the NFC East. And yet the Rams are almost a full touchdown favorite. So that led me to the Rams side. I thought maybe they're sitting on a good one here because we kind of thought they were a little bit phony last week. And we were both on the 49ers and they won 24-16. And it was actually easier than the final score indicated.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Rams got a late score in the fourth quarter to make it more cosmetically or aesthetically pleasing. But I think that this is the good spot for them. And all of a sudden, I tell you, the NFC West stock is absolutely at an all-time high with the NFC West with what Arizona did last night in the Sunday night game to Seattle. So you got every team in the league or every team in the division, rather, above 500.
To clarify, you think it's a good spot for the Rams?
I do.
Yeah, okay. Are you going to get involved?
I have gotten involved. Okay. I
5.5?
6.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, like, here's my thing with this. And I might be taking 6 here with the Chicago Bears because there's a couple of things, right? You kind of mentioned up to this point the Rams in terms of their schedule, right? Some really good wins, but again, all over NFC East teams. The two losses that they had, they were getting blown out by the Buffalo Bills before they come storming back. That 49ers game, which you mentioned, cosmetic score at the end to make it a little bit better. And then you look overall, too, some of the numbers for this team, Chicago, up front, and this is the kind of worry that I have. Like, I want to take 6, but there is some factors that make you think that there is a spot here for the Rams to have success with their running game. If we look at their defensive front, they're 11th in terms of adjusted line yards per carry allowed, the Chicago Bears, 4.09 yards per carry to opposing teams. If you look at some of the other spots, like 21st in terms of open field yards per carry, 20th in terms of second level yards per carry, 1.27. These numbers courtesy of Football Outsiders. Like, not the best, right?
Right.
In terms of, like, essentially giving up some big runs at times with that front seven. But I also look at some situations, Wes, like where they're 10th in terms of percentage of opposing runs stuffed behind the line of scrimmage. 19% of opposing runs behind the line of scrimmage they stuff. 4th in power situations. Like, there are some positives, too, for the run blocking, playing against the run here for the Chicago Bears in terms of the metrics. And I just, like, this was the part of it, too. Like, the Bears are a team that I wanted to kind of play against. The Rams are a team that I thought was a little overvalued in terms of the way the market has perceived them. And that kind of led me to look at Chicago catching 6.
That was the scenario I was in where I'd only played the over in the Sunday night game where right. I had two teams I wanted to fade. I wanted to fade Seattle because it just felt like they were ready to take a loss because they did what Seattle does and get the breaks, and kind of that's what Arizona did, and wanted to fade them off the Monday night performance, didn't get the opportunity. But I am going with the Rams here. I just think, look, if the Bears get behind early, that's the whole key for the Rams. They get off to a good start, they can pull away perhaps because the Bears just they have to play these close games, and that's what they've been really – all the time. They haven't reached over 270 yards in the last 3 games. So that offense sputters and the Rams can get an early score, Chicago could perhaps be in trouble.
Yeah, and it is fair to point out to that point that the Chicago Bears offensively are absolute dreck. And, like, that's the other part that could hold them back is the fact that even if their offense or, excuse me, their defense plays extremely well, if you get nothing going offensively, like, that is going to be something because this is a Rams front seven that leads or is at the top or near the top of the league in terms of blitz percentage, pressures, sacks. This is a front that can get after, surprisingly, because they got rid of Dante Fowler and they didn't get rid of him, but he left the team in the offseason, right? Your main pass rushing threat is one dude, and he's a defensive tackle, but it has worked for them up to this point in the way they can oppose or pressure opposing quarterbacks.
It has, and they're relatively healthy on both sides of the ball. Of course, Higby, the tight end, got upgraded to probable. Darrell Henderson also going to go. Robert Woods missed a couple practices last week. He's also going to go. But just looking at these props here, basically, the yes on Nick Foles to throw an interception -152 at Bet Rivers. So just to see it priced that high, and I haven't gotten as involved in the prop market as I was like to. I only kind of do it with standalone games, like who's going to score the first touchdown or whatnot. But that 249.5 looks a little high for Nick Foles for passing yards, don't you think?
I would think so. I mean, look. The one thing that worries me about Nick Foles, and again, you know how much I like numbers and metrics and things like that. The one thing you can't account for is a random good Nick Foles game.
Right.
Right. And like that is the one like thing when you look at like a touchdown passes or a total yards, I would say that is the thing that holds you back a little bit. And having said that, too, if you look at some of the defensive ratings, one of the things that the Rams struggle against defensively, not so much the pass, and that's a lot of that has to do with their, you know, pass rushing metrics that have been pretty good so far. But they're 21st if you look at DVOA numbers against the run.
Mm-hmm.
So the game plan would be run the ball extremely well and play really good defense for your Chicago, thus leading you to potentially playing some of these under in terms of Nick Foles props. 249.5, touchdown passes, 1.5, pass completions, 22.5, things like that.
And I got to think Matt Nagy wants to establish the run. I never know with Matt Nagy in terms of his game plan because he's all over the place, but they haven't really been able to run the ball very well. They didn't run the ball really well against the Colts. They got absolutely stuffed. So I got to think they do want to establish that run. So that could lead to the under on the Foles total yards.
By the way, get in touch with the show as well at me, JVT, at West Reynolds 1 up on Twitter. Moneyline Marv checks in, says yes to vests, no to capris and joggers. So, sorry, Jacob.
Moneyline Marv, I've explained it once. They're not capris. They're joggers. If you don't like comfort, then that's your fault, man.
Marv, Jacob is a little bit of a hipster. So, you know, these kids these days, that's how it works, you know? Look at it. Just look at him. He's got the hipster vibe going.
How? It's a Patagonia zip-up. So this is a dad zip-up.
He shooketh right now. All right, let's go to a little bit about last night. We'll talk a little bit about Sunday. So I thought there were three games, Wes, that we can kind of learn from, right, going forward here in the National Football League. And I wanted to start with Kansas City at Denver. Not the best matchup, right, on paper. It was a blowout here. But I thought there was one lesson taken from this. And Jacob, you weren't with us on Friday, but we had Kevin Roth on, right, the weather guy for Roto Grinders. And one of the topics that we discussed, Wes, and one of the things that I had brought up, when you look at, because we're now entering winter weather, right? You and I are wearing our jackets to prove a point here. It's actually boiling hot. We want to set the scene. The fact is, when it comes to winter weather, this is a lesson for everybody. Snow and cold does not drive a game under the total.
They call them snowvers, JBT.
Right. It is wind that is the effect.
Yes.
We brought this up on Friday when we talked to Kevin Roth, and it is a point again to bring up here because this total crashed to as low as 45.5. It opened 49.5. What goes well over the total. The Chiefs score 43 points. This is a lesson for almost everybody. And Jay Cornegay, you know, I do the local stuff for ESPN, and he made the joke. He makes the joke all the time is that when you show up, you know, the screens have all the games on, and then with one shows the winter weather, people just start running up to the counter, right, to start betting the game under. Sustained winds, and especially like 15 miles an hour and higher, that's what you want to look for in weather reports, not so much snow, because snow and cold won't affect things. Yes, it makes the ball a little bit harder. Maybe it makes it a little bit harder to catch and a little bit harder to kick, but that's not enough in terms of differences. The wind will alter it, and that's why this game flies over the total, and it's a lesson, I think, to be learned for bettors out
and
there.
And also a lesson that I have to pay the price, because, look, we're always learning no matter how long we've been doing this. I took Denver 9.5 yesterday, and then when you see the total, even though I agreed with you and all the points you made, I knew beforehand in terms of the totals, so I thought there was some value on the over. But usually when you see the under get bet, it gives a little bit more value to the underdog by and large here. Mm-hmm. And Denver at close 7. Now, the one thing is that Kansas City's not exactly a warm weather team. It's not like it was Tampa Bay in Denver,
right,
or somebody like that where it's really going to plummet. And this plummeted down to 7. And look, the Chiefs weren't even that great on offense. Patrick Mahomes is just kind of pedestrian, but they were able to take advantage of the 4 Denver turnovers. Denver was -3 in the turnover margin and had that interception return, because Denver was in the game in the first half, late in the first half. Then that Daniel Sorensen interception return pretty much put the game out of reach. And then Drew Lock started pressing. And what does Drew Lock do when he presses? He makes mistakes. And there you go, 43-16 Kansas City.
So the other lesson that we learned, I think, from yesterday, Buffalo at the New York Jets. And I want to get to the Buffalo side of things later in the program, right? Because there's a game that I'm really interested in coming this weekend with the Buffalo Bills. But from an overall betting perspective, from a Jets perspective too, because this is a Bills team that you and I talked about potentially a little overvalued by the market, especially after playing a soft schedule early. This number was as high as 13. It's a twofold lesson here. One, read media reports, because there was a report on Monday that said that Sam Darnold was trending towards playing, and this number sat at 13 for a good minute before it started to come back down and eventually closed at 9.5. But the other part is, you know, the point spread is the great equalizer, right? We talk about this all the time, and we have another spot coming this weekend. That number opened up 21.5 against the Kansas City Chiefs for the New York Jets. It's now down to 18.5. These big spreads in the National Football League, like, don't be afraid of playing some of these, because just because a team is bad doesn't mean they won't really get inside some of these numbers, especially on the other side when you have an overvalued team like the Buffalo Bills this weekend.
Well, and looking and going forward this week with the Jets in Kansas City, and we've already seen the Jets take a little bit of money.
Right.
It's kind of a get through it game for Kansas City. You just got to win on the road in the division. You won 2 straight road games. Now you come home, you're a big favorite. This is just one of those games where it's like, okay, we can take care of business, and we don't have to have our A game to get a comfortable win here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that gets into a team's mindset where it's like, we don't have to make a statement to just absolutely blow the doors off these guys. Now, they could end up doing it because the Jets have been obviously putrid this season. But when you're sitting at the 0-7, guys, even though that organization's a mess right now, they're still trying.
Yep.
They've got pride. It is very hard. It's harder to go 0-16 probably almost than it is to go 16-0, it seems like, in this league, but even though the Lions did find a way. But the Jets are going to keep playing. They know they're up against it against Kansas City. They know, okay, this is the way better team than we are. So they're at least going to give a max effort here. So I don't disagree necessarily with the line move.
And then Pittsburgh at Tennessee, Steelers, of course, get the win 27-24. And we know, of course, that this game could have played out differently had Stephen Kuskowski actually hit a kick at the end that potentially would have tied it up and sent it to overtime. But I do think that, again, we talk about, like, momentum and buying low on teams and maybe buying teams at their all-time market high. You and I brought this up with the Tennessee team. Like, there was a spot here to play against Tennessee, given the nature of the games that they had played going into this. The market really high on the Titans, swings it all the way to, what, 1.5, mm-hmm. 2 at one point Sunday morning before closing back at 1. Steelers get the win 27-24.
Right, and you're seeing it in the market now. 3.5.
Yep.
In the market on the Baltimore Ravens. This could be a buy low spot on Baltimore for me.
Could be. I've been riding the Steelers with teasers in straight up, and this might be the spot to maybe look. But we'll have more on that game later when we have our circled games of the week. When we come back, though, some key injuries to look at. We have an update on Odell Beckham Jr., what his prognosis is with that knee injury, and a couple of other guys in the National Football League. And remember, Tim Murray, bottom of the hour. Welcome in. You've looked, by the way, which is speaks volumes. I'm talking to our producer, Jacob Hipster, the Lord of the Hipsters, probably. I think they all just flock to him at this point, although he was probably Hipster before it was cool. All right, notable injuries. Not cool. National Football League. So some names to look at here. I teased this going out west, so we know the prognosis here. Odell Beckham Jr., torn ACL, done for the year. So the Cleveland Browns are going to be out without one of their top weapons. Clearly, that is a terrible blow here for Odell Beckham Jr. You wonder how this is going to – like, the initial thought, obviously, is how this affects Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Having said that, Baker Mayfield looked so terrible in the first half against Cincinnati and so much better in the second half. I get it, Cincinnati, one of the bottom teams in terms of overall defensive efficiency, but this is a team, as we cold-heartedly, you know, analyze this without Odell Beckham Jr., it's a team that is predicated on their run game, and their passing game is, you know, built into that. It's a loss. But if their running attack is going to be just as effective, this is something you can overcome if you're the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, and I didn't expect that on this OBJ news that we were actually going to see this much of a move, being it bet down to pretty much 2.5 market wide. Still some threes there,
right,
but juice to the Raiders side if you want to take that key number. Because the Raiders were kind of a spot. I was hoping this wasn't that he wasn't going to be out, because I was hoping to get 3.5 on the Raiders.
Right. You and I were kind of walking step yesterday.
Yeah.
It looked like a spot for Las Vegas.
And that's probably not going to happen. Look, it's a downgrade, but Donovan Peoples-Jones yesterday really stepped up, the former Michigan receiver, because he hadn't done much as a rookie, but really stepped up, caught the winning touchdown yesterday. So
3 for 56, and then, of course, that game-winning touchdown that Wes is referencing.
Yeah.
By the way, on 3 targets.
Yes.
So every target he pulled in.
Yeah, I wanted to be on the Raiders, and I still think it's teaser territory. Obviously, to get it through the 3 and the 7, and those key number teasers have been very good this year in the NFL, and we've covered it here on The Edge and also on Opening Line. So it's still teaser territory, but I can't take it at 2.5, and I don't know if we're going to see 3 again.
Other injuries to look at here, and again, these are just some key injuries coming out of this previous week of the National Football League. Ones to keep an eye on, of course, Andy Dalton goes down with a concussion. We don't know his status for this coming week, and clearly, of course, make his way out of concussion protocol if he is indeed healthy.
Primetime Ben DiNucci.
Yeah, I still can't believe they haven't flexed this game out. This is absolutely asinine. Global shops, though, 7.5. DraftKings has 7.5 as well for the Philadelphia Eagles. I do wonder, I asked you this question yesterday, I'll ask you this again for the audience who wasn't with us last night. even if Dalton's activated, does the number move? Because I would say maybe seven, but like I think the market's going to be so down on the Cowboys
right.
that it's not going to affect it whether Dalton plays or not.
Right, and there aren't very many numbers here on my screen. I know DraftKings had 7.5 on the Eagles. I don't think it's a big move either because look, Philly did get a win, albeit not a cover on Thursday Night Football last week. But Carson Wentz, mm-hmm. your boy. He looked good. You go, I
Ginger
still
God.
Believe in Carson Wentz.
Ginger God.
And he probably had his best game of the season last Thursday night against the New York Football Giants.
Yep. Also, names to keep an eye on here. And a guy like Russell Okung is not going to alter a point spread, but Carolina Panthers potentially without their left tackles. Russell Okung goes down with a calf injury in that game against the New Orleans Saints. Philip Lindsay, which again might not affect a point spread, but could be pretty valuable considering Melvin Gordon potentially facing league discipline, but I don't think so for that DUI. But Philip Lindsay with a concussion, he of course was ruled out, was very effective at times against the Kansas City Chiefs. And then the two names that I think we definitely have to keep an eye on, because of course it just adds to the laundry list of injuries that the San Francisco 49ers are dealing with. Because remember, Raheem Mostert hit IR this week, Debo Samuel and Jeff Wilson, both out with various injuries at the end of that game. Jeff Wilson looks pretty serious. Debo Samuel with a hamstring issue. So again, two key offensive players for San Francisco, a team riddled with injuries, getting struck yet again with two games.
Yeah, and that's a game I'm going to be interested to ask George Shahori, our friend from Pro Football Focus at the time.
I don't know if he's our friend. I don't think he likes us that much. I think he just comes on to promote himself.
He's our acquaintance.
All right, yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm curious to ask him about that game, that San Francisco-Seattle, because immediately this morning, Niners money hit the market.
Yep.
Despite all of their injuries, of Seattle off that loss last night on Sunday Night Football, where Russell Wilson had three interceptions, very uncharacteristic. But nevertheless, Arizona gets a comeback win. And all of a sudden, you're seeing -3 on Seattle, even some flat -3s like at Circa Sports, like at DraftKings. Most places, it's $1.15, $1.20 vig. But this opened 4, and 49ers have seen the support immediately.
And last but not least here, the Arizona Cardinals, of course, their key running back, Kenyon Drake, dealing with an ankle injury. And so we'll see what the ramifications are of that. But that is a massive role player for Arizona if he cannot play this coming week.
Now they wish they had David Johnson. Well, actually, they don't, because they got DeAndre Hopkins in exchange.
Right.
And I'd say that was a pretty good trade for the Arizona Cardinals.
All right. Well, you brought up Carson Wentz. Speaking of ginger gods, Tim Murray is going to join us in about 15 minutes from now. We're going to set that spot up, though, talking about his beloved Irish, because not only did he get a big win over Pitt, sets up maybe a look-ahead spot against Georgia Tech, and then on the other side, of course, a matchup with Clemson. If you like to place your bets just before the game, Bet Rivers Sportsbook is a perfect place for you. Go to Bet Rivers mobile app on any NFL game day. Find 30% less vig on point spreads and point totals, which means more money in your pocket. As always, get great customer service and only one-time playthrough at Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Got to be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER, Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT, Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. All right. So let's get into this college football style here, Wes. So big win for the Irish, 45-3. Beat the crap out of Pittsburgh. Closes a 10-point favorite. Game goes over the total, mainly due to the Irish, pretty much, of 44. So here's my question for you, because I brought this up a couple of weeks now with the Pitt Panthers. And we've talked about this before. Their front seven is legitimate. Mm-hmm. They can play the run better than almost anybody. Having said that, I don't know if it's their aggressive style of play up front or whatever it is. Their secondary is not good. Like, their secondary actually gets burned quite a bit. And you saw an aggressive passing attack from the Irish. The Ian Book, 16-30, 312 yards, 3 touchdowns against the Panthers, really exploiting the issues in the secondary here. So you don't want to overvalue, you don't want to overvalue the win, right, over Pitt. You don't want to undervalue it either. But it sets up an interesting scenario going forward here, because one, Now they get a Georgia Tech team, which I've told you this before, I was higher on coming into this year. My confidence was built up by the fact that they beat Florida State despite a very sloppy game, right, in the early part of the season, their first game. But then it kind of fell off after that. So it's an interesting sandwich spot where you opened up as an 18-point favorite on the road against Georgia Tech, because on the other side, now you have Clemson. So your read here of Notre Dame going into this Georgia Tech matchup after what you saw against Pitt.
From a number standpoint, I think it's too high. And we talked about it with Matt Eumanns last night on opening lines. Matt was like 16 and a half. I was around 17. Now we're seeing 20. And look, this could get to an even 21. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's very far-fetched to say that. And we're even seeing a couple 20 and a halves at some more
prominent
public,
global books,
more public, faraway places, mm-hmm. If you will, JVT. And
I will.
But looking at Georgia Tech here, they were beat up last week, because when you play a team, it wasn't even based on just the final score, 73-7, Clemson winning at Georgia Tech 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
When you play a top team like that, you take a physical pounding. And sometimes that materializes and hangs over to the next game. And you clearly saw that on an improved Boston College team.
Yeah, and by the way, and I don't think it's the case anymore, but it used to be like that with Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the game after the teams would play Alabama, they were actually a play against as well, because they were so worn down from the physical style of playing from the tight.
We saw it with Tennessee earlier this year, right, after they played Georgia. And then they had nothing for Kentucky the next game, which that's what it led me to be on the Wildcats there. But nevertheless, back to Georgia Tech. I think Jeff Collins is doing a good job there.
I do too.
I think it's going to take time. Keep in mind, this was a team that ran the triple option under Paul Johnson for over a decade. Mm-hmm. So now you're more of a hybrid spread option, hybrid with pro style offense, not really a true spread. Jeff Sims could be a good quarterback. He was a Florida State commit at one point, decommitted to go to Georgia Tech. Turns the ball over too much. He's a true freshman quarterback, and he throws too many interceptions. Just one last week, but he's got 10 on the year.
Also lost the fumble
last
week.
Yes, he did. Yep. So he's got some real turnover issues. I think Georgia Tech's defense is the better unit of the two, more consistent than the offense. But I'd be a little gun-shy about laying Notre Dame here. I just really would, with Clemson coming in. Now, Notre Dame did get more aggressive in the passing game, which I've kind of been waiting to see, because I've kind of felt that maybe Brian Kelly's not totally, he's letting Tommy Rees borrow the car as the offensive coordinator, but he's not giving him the keys to drive it full time. And it looked like they were a little more aggressive in their play calling. That was part and parcel due to the fact that Pitt is very good against the run. Mm-hmm. And Notre Dame, I think they average under 3 yards a carry.
They're still really good against the run, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you got a senior quarterback. I think the problem with Notre Dame is they lost a lot of skill position guys, including Chase Claypool. We're seeing what he's doing with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Cole Kmet.
Absolutely. So Ian Book's having to carry a lot more of the load, really. So
you got a book of tea time? What's up?
No. Okay. No. No, sir. No, sir. I'll do that during the break.
So let me bring this up, too. And this was, so I agree with everything you said. I like Georgia Tech a lot. I like their, like, the direction that they're going in. The one thing that really worries me going into this matchup with Notre Dame, Boston College went into that game against Georgia Tech, West, the 75th ranked rushing offense in the country.
Right.
They were averaging like 2.2 yards per carry, 60 yards per game, and they rip off 264 yards and 6 yards a carry.
It's a total opposite, too, because when Steve Adazio was there, they were a running team, primarily with Dylan and with Anthony Brown, who's now at Oregon as a graduate transfer quarterback. They were more of a running team. So you thought, well, BC's got a really good offensive line. I even said that in the season preview. I was like, they should be able to run the ball. They hadn't been able to run the ball at all. It's been Phil Yerkovec, the Notre Dame transfer, that has carried them. So this might be a game I stay out of. If it gets high enough, I'd be tempted on the Yellow Jackets, though.
So now we spin this forward, because your thoughts on everything we've seen from Notre Dame up to this point against Clemson. Game of the year line over at DraftKings, Clemson-Notre Dame, was Clemson -7.5. Have you seen anything that would move it off of that number? I would think that maybe it just goes to like a 7, but I don't think I've seen enough to where I would be like, you know what, like, let's drastically alter this look ahead line that we saw of Clemson -7.5 over Notre Dame.
Right, and look, about a week ago, they were thinking, oh, Clemson might be almost 2 touchdowns,
right,
you know, with how Notre Dame looked against Louisville, but That was a bad weather game. I mean, it was windy in South Bend. It was just a sloppy kind of get through it game for both of those teams. you know, going forward now with Clemson, they have Boston College in this week, 32 now, 31 and a half. It all depends on how interested Clemson is.
Yeah.
Do they really want to run out Boston College? I know that they've run up a couple big scores, especially with Georgia Tech winning 73-7, but I don't think Clemson's in a position where, okay, we got to get style points against lesser opponents, especially when you've got a Notre Dame, you actually get to play them in a conference game this year. I don't think you really got to roll it up. And we saw it on Saturday against Syracuse.
Yeah.
That was a one score game in the third quarter. Clemson was very sloppy.
Well, it was with Dabo getting all pissy afterwards. Like, am I in the wrong press conference? Right. The comments, like, I thought we won the game. Like it's fine to ask legitimate questions about you struggling against Syracuse, by the way, yet again. For some reason, Syracuse has just been like a pain in their ass.
And Syracuse is putrid.
Right.
And I've been against them pretty much every week. I did not lay the points.
It's very clear that they looked past Clemson.
Yeah.
Extremely clear.
Yeah. And Boston College, look, Jeff Hafley's done a good job there.
Yeah.
Defensive coordinator from Ohio State coming in. Obviously, they're not going to be close in this game, but
the ACC looks like it's going to be pretty good in like the next couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
Georgia Tech on the uptick with the athletes there, getting Boston College as well.
I wouldn't be laying it with Clemson here. I don't think. I think they know they've got a big one on deck in South Bend.
Well, let's find out what Tim Murray thinks. Host of My Guys in the Desert. He's going to join us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts not only on Notre Dame's performance against Pitt, how we spin it forward against Georgia Tech. A couple other things we get to. Tim's been fantastic in college football. We'll get that insight when we return. Just what the world needs, by the way. Drake has confirmed a release date for his new album. So there you go. Certified Lover, set to be released January 2021. We needed it, Wes. 2020's been so bad. Look forward to Drake. I also look forward to our next guest, the Ginger Lord himself, Tim Murray, who's nice enough to give us a couple of minutes, host of My Guys in the Desert. I think he's called himself that, right? I mean, come on. Tim's with us right now. Tim, what's up, buddy? So let's talk about we were talking about your Irish before we had you on. I think it's a fascinating spot here against Georgia Tech. Like, Georgia Tech's a team that I was kind of thinking we're going to be better this coming year. I like what they have on the roster. This number's up to 20 against the Yellow Jackets. What do you make the spot coming off of that win against Pitt?
Yeah, it's one of those classic, sandwich spots with Clemson coming up on November 7th. This, to me, and I haven't decided what to do yet, I would lean Notre Dame in this spot. Maybe Notre Dame first half. Whenever those lines come out. And the reason being, you know, Notre Dame has openly acknowledged that they are looking ahead to Clemson. You know, Brian Kelly talked about Clemson after the win at Pittsburgh. This team knows that this entire season rides on that home game against the number one team in the country in 2 weeks. So you would think, okay, well, now they're going to be overlooking Georgia Tech. I just don't know if that's the case. I feel like they're trying to fine tune things, and they might just want to get out of Atlanta. Let's be crisp and let's, you know, do what we have to do. I think Notre Dame will also try to establish the run a little bit more. Pittsburgh, one of the best rush defenses in the country, and they, I would say, did an effective job. Pittsburgh did, but Notre Dame, if you look inside the box score, was able to, you know, get those third and ones that were needed to extend drives against Pittsburgh over the weekend. So, yeah, this is a tricky spot because I would think, you know, grabbing the points would probably be what most people would do. I haven't decided if I'm going to play it yet, but I do think Notre Dame, that the Louisville game to me, guys, was kind of the clunker. You know, they escaped that Louisville game. And I'm kicking myself for not playing the Irish against Pittsburgh this weekend, because Pittsburgh, especially with Yellen playing quarterback, Mark Whipple is a terrible offensive coordinator. I mean, they could do absolutely nothing. So, you know, you got Sims there, Georgia Tech running, doing his thing there in the backfield. But I would think about maybe Notre Dame early. And then who knows if they take their foot off the gas pedal and then just try to get out of Atlanta to be healthy heading into Clemson.
And to Tim's point, too, in terms of establishing the run, as we talked about, 264 yards, 6.6 flat in terms of yards per carry for the 75th ranked rush offense in Boston College against Georgia Tech over the weekend. Yeah. So it is not looking like a stout front seven for the Yellow Jackets. So let's spin this forward a little bit then. You know, Notre Dame can't look ahead, but we can. Look ahead line was Clemson minus 7.5. I asked Wes this question. I'll ask you. You follow the program closely. Have you seen anything since the start of the season against Duke to where we're at now that has changed your mind on this game against Clemson? And what were your thoughts beginning of the season for this matchup for the Irish?
Well, I think you can. I think what you can look at is maybe look a little bit into Georgia, Alabama, and this is the correlation here. We talked about that game, obviously, and that's a game where Alabama ultimately, you know, ran away with it. In this day and age, great offense trumps great defense. Right now, Notre Dame is looking like a borderline great defense. They, you know, they still have some question marks, you know, at the linebacker buck position up front too. But the worry I have, if you are thinking about backing the Irish for this, they cannot get pressure, guys. You know, they are really struggling getting pressure on the quarterback. And that's a bit of an issue when you have the best quarterback in the country on the other side. So if it's 7.5, grab it. Honestly, I mean, don't even think. I know DraftKings had it at 15.5 last week, might have come down a little bit. I'd say anywhere under 2 touchdowns, I would really think long and hard about Clemson, because look, Clemson got out of Syracuse. That was sloppy. You know, Dabo's going to say his thing about, oh, you know, why aren't we getting, you know, we just won by 26 points. At the end of the day, Syracuse knows that, Clemson knows that come November 7th, you know, the world's going to be watching and they're going to want to put on a show. And I just think the athletes that Clemson has are going to outduel Notre Dame. And unfortunately for the Irish guys, Notre Dame has been really waiting for the return of Kevin Austin, who was a high 4-star recruit, has really had few opportunities on the field, was suspended all of last year. Well, last week he broke a bone in his foot, so he's done for the year. Braden Lindsey, who's the fastest receiver that they have, pulled up lame on a fly pattern against Pittsburgh. Notre Dame's biggest issue, and we've talked about this on My Guys quite a bit, is they cannot create separation at the wide receiver position. And, you know, when it comes to Notre Dame, the questions I have, they need to get to the tight ends a lot. They started to do that against Pittsburgh. Michael Mayer, a 5-star recruit, had a big game there. They got the ball to the grad transfer, Ben Skoranek from Northwestern. But yeah, I like Clemson a lot in this spot, and that's coming from a Notre Dame fan. I you know, guys, I'm pretty honest in my assessment usually, and I've seen this story a little too often. I just think right now, when you look at Clemson, the athletes that they have, and I'm sure Brent Venables is going to scheme up a real good defensive plan for the Irish on November 7th.
Tim, I want to flip over to the Big Ten and do a couple quick hits on a couple other games, but I got to start with the marquee matchup of the week, and that's Ohio State and Penn State. And look, I'm obviously very happy with the result of the Penn State Indiana game, but Penn State, look, if they were playing Akron or one of those usual teams to start the season, they could get away with turning the ball over 3 times in the first half and 100 yards of penalties. Can't get away with it when you start right away in the Big Ten, and we talked about that all last week here on VSiN. But 488 yards, ran the ball very well, in spite of the fact Journey Brown, their leading running back, going to be out for the year with a heart condition. But Penn State's real deep at running back, so they were able to run the ball. And look, they come off with the disappointing loss, but now they get Ohio State. James Franklin's like, Ohio State, Ohio State, Ohio State, tweeting about it, that they're on to the Buckeyes. Opened 8 at Circa. Now you're seeing 13.5 at some spots. It's still 12 at Circa and Westgate. Something tells me, though, that this could be a setup to try to get maybe Ohio State laying 14 and money comes in on the Nittany Lions, because they've covered 4 of the last 5. They always get up for Ohio State.
Yeah, they have done a nice job against Ohio State. James Franklin has, pretty historically, to keep these games close. Yeah, I mean, they got to clean things up. You have to have a clean game if you want to survive with Ohio State. You know, early on in that Nebraska game, the Ohio State defense looked a little bit leaky. So you wonder if there's a chance for Penn State to score some points. But, you know, what we saw, and look, you know, that was a classic Indiana took advantage of short field positions, mistakes, obviously, at the end of the game, clock management wise, with Penn State scoring that touchdown. But the defense wasn't that bad. They were just put in some tricky spots. But yeah, Justin Fields, you know, picking up where he left off, looking as efficient as possible. Yeah, I would have loved to get this anywhere under 10. As we get close to two touchdowns, I think you have to start thinking about the dog in this spot, because Wes, you're right. I mean, you look at historically, Penn State has done well against Ohio State. I mean, the unfortunate part for, you know, college football, and we'll say this time after time, right? I mean, this was going to be your classic whiteout game. It was going to be Halloween. I mean, everyone was going to be juiced up all day tailgating. I mean, I've been in a whiteout, not playing, just been there as an opposing fan. And as an opposing fan, I was intimidated. So, you know, there as a there as on the field, it would have been a huge advantage for Ohio State, and it would have added to the juice. So I think the fact that there are no fans there is detrimental to Penn State's chances. Yeah, I'm curious because, you know, we talked about it, and Wes, you brought this up when you joined us last week. We had Nicole Auerbach on the show talking about the Big Ten, and is Ohio State going to want to put in those type of style points? I mean, look at that schedule, guys. After this game for Ohio State, there's nobody right that's going to trip them up until that December 12th matchup against Michigan. So, you know, you've got Rutgers, who, you know, got the win. Wes's Indiana boys right there on November 21st. But who's really going to stub Ohio State's toe? So you got to wonder, you know, how much have they been looking forward to this? And as we saw, I know we apologize, guys, but guess who scored a late touchdown against Nebraska, Ohio State. So once again, I think if they have the opportunity to score late, they might be looking into doing that. So I know it's a lot of points, and we've seen a lot of line movement, but it could be intriguing to play Ohio State in this spot.
Well, especially against the king of running up scores against lesser competition at James Franklin. He loves to do that. By the way, kind of a fraudulent win for Indiana, no? Penix was down.
Yeah, it was.
Penix was down. Come
we
on.
Don't. We never apologize for wins when it's your first time beating a top 10 team since 1987. And but that being said, I don't want to lay the double digits with Indiana at Rutgers this week.
We can also make the obvious joke of just the tip with a guy with the last name of Penix, but we won't do that either. Tim Murray with us as well, host of My Guys in the Desert. Tim, we are up against it, so let's just ask you this before we get you out of here. Rutgers, Michigan State, the takeaway here, Michigan State, second worst team in the conference, maybe ahead of Maryland?
Oh, they're awful. I mean, seven turnovers. You know, it's nice to have a no sweat grabbing 13.5 points earlier in the week with Rutgers. It was nice to have a no sweat outright win. Props to anyone who took them on the money line. Rutgers is better. They will hit their over on wins at 1.5. I think that you could say that with rather confidence right now. But Michigan State, as many people expected, down year for the Spartans. And, you know, they're getting 25 against Michigan this week. That kind of goes to show you. I saw Matt Metcalf tweet that if they didn't play last week, this line would have been 13.5. Mm-hmm. So there has been some massive adjustments on Michigan State.
Tim Murray, again, you can follow him up on Twitter at @1TimMurray. And of course, host of My Guys in the Desert. Tim, always good to talk to you, man.
All right, boys. Talk to you.
Yep,
thanks,
you
Tim. Him.
And again, My Guys in the Desert getting started later today. That would be 2 p.m. Pacific time. I'm not good at conversions. I think that's 5 to 7 on the East Coast. So there you go. I like it. I'm just riffing you, man. Penix was in. Clearly, it was a very good win.
Look, when you're a middle to lower program, and I got a lot of grief saying, oh, Indiana got lucky, that was a bad call. You know how many bad calls the lower teams in the Big Ten get against the big boys over the years? It's about time one for the little guys. So I'd like to apologize to absolutely nobody for Indiana's win over Penn State this weekend.
Good reference. Good reference. All right. Second hour of the program on the way. George Shahori is going to join us. We will find out the answer to the question that Wes posed in the first block. Is he our friend? We don't know.